The reading today, in many ways, is really about how to pray, especially the second portion of it, which is the Bhagavad Gita. So often when this reading comes around, I spend my attention on the woman who touched Jesus, but today I'm going to start over there at the Gita, because it's sometimes the importance of that is missed, because the other story is so dramatic. A couple of years ago, Swami Kriyananda was diagnosed with several serious health problems. He had to have his gallbladder removed, and he also had stomach cancer, or cancer cells in his stomach. It hadn't advanced that. It hadn't gotten too bad yet. And when the news was coming, and he was living in India at the time, and all of us know once you get into a medical process, it's never a clear-cut thing. It's never like today, and you get all the news today. It tends to dribble out over time. Sometimes it gets worse. Sometimes it gets better. And there was a lot of phone calls and emails going back and forth from New Delhi to all the different colonies in America. And there was a lot of different difference of opinion about whether or not to tell everyone everything or to hold back in the name of privacy or the dilemma that people face if you don't want people's negative thoughts, but you also want to have their prayers. Everybody was talking about it when Swami just cut through it all, and he said, fundamentally, I want everyone to know everything, which was a point of view I was very happy to hear, because I feel very much that he's the founder of Ananda. We're all part of Ananda. Everything about his life is important to every person who lives here, even if you don't know it that it is. Well, of course, what that unleashed, naturally, was a torrent of prayers that began as these 24-hour vigils that I think we were running around the globe. That's how we did it. So that there was 24-hour prayer happening in different time zones so that most people didn't have to stay up all night. Plus, many individuals became involved in praying for Swamiji, and he very shortly had an operation and then the recover period and all the time these prayers were going on. Now, what that involved was it got many people involved in the thought of praying for him. And the effect of that was really profound. And oddly enough, Swamiji said later he felt that that experience changed our community irrevocably. Because many aspects happened all at once. In the first place, there is this inclination when we are in the presence of someone whose spirituality we respect, and we have the idea in our mind that that person can give us something that we need, and we also may have very strongly in our mind the thought that we have nothing to give that person, the energy becomes very much of, please help me. And sometimes we even think that our humility is best expressed by, please help me. Why would I presume to be able to help you? I know in my experience of years of relating to Swamiji, in person, especially at the beginning when we lived in the same community that he lived in, I was often quite rude to him is actually the words that I have to come to, and quite inconsiderate. And I gradually realized that I was less courteous and considerate to him than I was of almost anyone else in my life, because I was always so concerned about my smallness and his largeness that I neglected even common courtesies. You know, just things that I would naturally do for anybody. Oh, you're feeling sick, here's a flower. You know, are you thirsty? Can I give you a cup of water? It was always this great sense of me is really the only thing I can think of. In the name of being humble, the only thought I ever had was me. Now, acting it out with him in person is just a tangible expression of what we often are like in our own inner relationship to God. Oh, Master, please help me. Oh, help me do this. Oh, God, do this for me. Oh, please, you know, I'm just such a nothing. I'm having so much trouble. Please help me. But the thought form that we get into, the big two-letter, you know, focus of our attention is me. What about me? What about me? You know, and even though we're trying to be telling God, what we're really saying is, what about me? And that's not really what the spiritual path is all about. You know, we tend to think, in fact, that the spiritual path is about my spiritual advancement, and I have to focus on my spiritual advancement, and I have to do this for my spiritual advancement, and I have to be like this for my spiritual advancement, which begins to sound a lot like, what about me, doesn't it? Whereas In the early years that when I was first came to live at Ananda Village, this was the summer of 1971, I found myself, by a series of events, in charge of the whole kitchen, the whole kitchen for the whole retreat, which was much smaller than it is now, but most of the residents didn't have kitchens, so it was about 40 people, 3 meals a day, 6 days a week. And on the seventh day, she didn't rest. She drove into town and got supplies. But it was fine. I was 24 years old, full of energy, and I'd everything else to do. But my total preoccupation was meal after meal after meal. And I just had to say jokingly to Master, I hope you're in the soybeans because that's the only place my attention is. But the odd thing about it was very interesting because sometimes, you know, over the course of the summer, people would say things to me like, how are you? And when someone would say, how are you? It would like, I would go like this, like that thought, because it just startled me to have to stop and come back about wondering how I was. I was just too busy. And I was too focused on everything else that I was doing. Now, it was really a golden period of my life. To be fair, there have been many wonderful golden periods, but that was definitely one of them. But what I realized and learned and gradually put into philosophical terms later was that the spiritual path is about self-forgetfulness. That's what we're trying to do. We're not trying to become really advanced. We're trying to cease to exist. Not to become unconscious, not to become nothing, but to become so conscious of the infinite that the little self just isn't an issue anymore. And even self-advancement is self-forgetfulness, you see. Not self-forgetfulness into darkness, but self-forgetfulness through expansion. Now, when it came time for everybody to take their turns, those people who chose to or in the privacy of their own meditations, for people to contemplate Swamiji with the thought of sending him energy or asking Master to bless him or visualizing Divine Mother around him, whatever it might be. Some of you were here a few years ago when Swamiji gave a satsang here, right, almost literally in this spot. And his health was declining for a number of years until this last May when he was, May meaning a few weeks ago, when he was miraculously healed, his own words, and he said at that time that he felt like last May was his destined time to die, and he very nearly died, but when he didn't, he's become extremely well again. So a lot of these stories over the last half dozen years, I think, were him heading for that death time. Nothing about his karma is normal, but that's a whole nother discussion, because it's not about him. It's not his karma. It's kind of the whole collective going on to this. But Swamiji was sitting here, and we decided we'd send him a blessing, and I stood beside him, and I said, visualize Swamiji, and Swamiji said, you don't have to visualize me. I'm sitting right here. So we started over. But anyway, people were meditating on Swamiji, visualizing him because he was thousands of miles away. But the thought form all of a sudden wasn't, what about me? The thought form was, how can I give? Recently I read something Swami was writing about gratitude, and it was so interesting the way he said it. He said, there comes a point, let me see how to say it, where gratitude and love are the same thing. That it, and we're also, where gratitude is simply the natural response to the bliss you feel in your heart. That's what I was wanting to say. So here we are, and many people who are aware enough to know that everything that we experience here is because of his efforts, you start to meditate and this great sense of gratitude comes. Even if you've never met the man, any aspect of Ananda that you enjoy, you should thank him for. Because all of it is the manifestation of his consciousness. I mean, there's a tremendous spiritual dimension here, but even just the simple truth that any institution is the lengthened shadow of one man, of whoever's inspiration it was, just even in strictly worldly terms, that's true. But in any case, when individuals began to contemplate him with gratitude and with giving, what happened was, consciousness merged, you see, because the thought was no longer, what about me? the me was moved slightly aside, and all of a sudden consciousness merged with the object of our devotion, of our communion. And as people spoke to me and to others, two things happened. One was, wow, I never really understood what his consciousness was like. I never understood that his consciousness is accessible, or I never really knew how to pray. And all of those things, you see, are really the beginning of true spiritual advancement, which is in such love and gratitude to contemplate the divine that the self is simply dissolved. And this is what the Gita is talking about here also, when it says, through constant worship, through constant thought of me, to merge with me. And this is also the story of the woman who touched Jesus' robe. You know, what was it that was going on in her consciousness? What was going on in her consciousness is moving toward the light, but moving toward the light with such a sense of communion with that light. Yes, she explained she was moved because she was ill, but many people were crowding around him and only she was healed. They don't explain in great detail in this part of the Bible. That's why the Gita is added to it. You know, it's just said that somehow she did something else, and it was her faith. Now, it can't have been the faith that said, you can take care of me. I know you can take care of me. I know you can. It had to have been something in which their consciousness merged, you see. And the answer to that is always this self-giving attitude, self-giving, self-offering, self-surrender, whatever words we call it, I know what this is from. This is from the Lessons on Prosperity, Manifesting Through the Power of Yoga, which is a class we've just started on Tuesday. In the introduction to that, Swamiji is talking about Vedanta philosophy. Vedanta philosophy explains that ultimately all this world is an illusion. Our individuality is an illusion, and even the idea that there is God in us, God and us, as two separate consciousnesses, is an illusion. And so many people hearing that, the operative word again becomes I. Well, if God is in me, then I am God. The sages all tell us that's a little dangerous, because the subconscious association with the word I is very strongly linked to the ego. And what you see a great deal of now is a kind of pseudo-spirituality, which is really, in the name of spirituality, just building a great big me. But we call that great big me the power of the infinite flowing through me, the great whatever. But vibrationally, we're just building a great big me. So that's why the sages always say, and even the Vedanta philosophy says, it's better to worship God as separate. It's better to have devotion and humility before that infinite giving power, which we may ultimately realize to be ourselves, but for now seems a lot bigger than us. When I was first and even still at Ananda and deeply devoted to Swami Kriyananda, people would say, well, you know, is he self-realized? Does he really speak for Master? Does he really have the right to speak for Master? Maybe in all these different things. And my answer was always a very common sense one. Well, the difference between Swamiji and Paramhansa Yogananda, his guru and ours, may be very clear to the two of them, but it's not real clear to me. But the difference between Swami and me is very, very obvious. And so let me first bridge that gap, and then I'll worry about the one after it. You know, that's the way we need to live in this world. We need to live in this world with this humble, receptive gratitude to all that is given to us, and lifting our consciousness not merely to receive, but to merge in self-offering love. You know, the one we love the most is the one to whom we want to give the most, isn't it? And the only thing that holds us back is the thought, what about me? But when we forget that thought in the contemplation of pure loving, then God can also, just as Jesus was able to give to that woman, give to us all that he longs to fill us with, his bliss, his love, his perfect presence.